Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we open tonight, and unlike the last 2 weeks, I don't hear the Syracuse theme song playing. I don't know why.
Wait, they're playing right now. So you can tune in to ESPN and catch them whip up on Georgia Tech if you kindly like that, and if you want me to down the field, go to Syracuse.
Georgia Tech. I could find five guys in my office to beat Georgia Tech at this point. That doesn't mean anything.
Did any of them go to Maryland?
Well, I didn't say they couldn't beat Maryland either, because Maryland is the king of losing two-point games. Welcome to the show, Seth and Sean, Back Sports Radio, Back Sports Page, Blog Talk Radio. Syracuse losing 3 out of 4, pretty much 2 tough losses, obviously, in the last couple weeks to Duke. I'm forgetting the other – oh, to Boston College. What happened against Virginia? Virginia, a nice team, but not a team that should be winning the ACC by any stretch of the imagination. Is Syracuse just tired of playing with a 7-man rotation throughout the year?
I think Syracuse is definitely tired. They lost Jeremy Grant for the last 3 games. He's played limited minutes, and he's I guess their inside presence if they have one. And I think people are underrating Virginia. I mean, Virginia, they are a good team. They're not a great team, but, I mean, they're number 6 in the nation right now. So it's not like they can be said to be an awful team. They won the ACC. They lost to Duke. That's the only loss that they've had in big-time ACC. That's the only loss in the ACC. They've only lost 1 game. So,
right. But they also only played Duke once. They played North Carolina once. They played Syracuse once. They played Pittsburgh once. So they play pretty much all the top teams, and I hesitate to put Pittsburgh or North Carolina, although North Carolina has won 12 in a row, as top level teams. They lost by 35 to Tennessee. They've had some bad losses early. Now, are they a good team? Yeah, I see them as a Sweet 16 team. I don't really see them going much further. Their defense is stifling, though, and that is always dangerous come tournament time.
Yeah, Seth, those losses were all pretty early in the year, too. I mean,
I
understand that we'd like to give a little bit of slack to the younger teams because they're growing and maturing throughout the year, the Kansas and the Kentuckys. But I think every team, when you're in college, matures throughout the year, so you become a little bit more of a cohesive unit. And the fact that Virginia plays their style, which is a boring, boring game. I mean, they play what I would amount to is lacrosse game, which is 4 corners. We're going to use up all 30 seconds on the shot clock, and then we're going to shoot, and we're going to play stifling D. And that's great. It reminds me of the Heat versus the Knicks in the 80s or in the 90s, where it was just horrible to watch. But you know what? It's effective, and they're playing very well, and they play their style very well. And give props to Tony Bennett. And not the singer Tony Bennett, but rather the basketball coach Tony Bennett, who has done a terrific job at Virginia.
Yeah, I do wonder if this will be his launching pad into the national limelight. A great coach at Washington State, which are 2 words you really don't put together very often, and successful actually following his legendary father Dick Bennett at Wisconsin Green Bay before that. We're about a week and a half away from the conference tournaments, 2 weeks from the tournament. Now we haven't talked that much college basketball this season, and for a variety of reasons. Football obviously runs in, then you have the Olympics. I've been a little bit more impressed this year than in more recent years in college basketball. I think we both agree that the most talented team in the country is Kansas, if healthy, which is certainly nothing. Nothing concrete. That they would be both of our favorites going in. Do you see Wichita State as a 1 seed right now?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you go 31-0. I understand the competition is not to the extent that it would be in the major conferences, but 31-0 is 31-0. I mean, it's hard to win 31 games. I don't care who you are. I don't care what competition you have. It means they did not have an off night any one of those nights. So they are definitely a 1 seed. They played as long as they win. They can lose in the conference tournament. I seriously think they can lose in the conference tournament and still be a 1 seed, but they have to make the finals.
I think that, to me, they're – now let me ask you this. do you, now I know you're not supposed to take the prior year into account, but this is a team that gave, as you can hear the fire alarms going off right outside my office, this is a team that gave eventual champion Louisville their best game in their toughest run in the tournament. Does this kind of, you know, it's a year later, does this kind of establish a bit more credibility with you in regards to the mid-major? The MVC has not been great this year. Creighton was in there last year. They've obviously moved on to the AAC or the Big East or whatever they're calling it at this point.
Those are two different conferences.
I understand.
And there's the Big East.
I understand. I forget which one they're in. So that's why I think they're in the Big East now, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Having their success last year going to the Final Four, does this help establish credibility for them this year, or should it?
Well, it absolutely does, and it absolutely should. I mean, as far as the credibility this year, you know, again, it's 31-0. I don't care who you're playing. It's 31-0. 31-0 means a whole lot. It means you haven't taken a night off at all. So I think the credibility this year is the fact that they haven't lost a game. And I really don't care who you are. Not losing a game throughout an entire season is an impressive feat. Now, as far as validating what they did last year and will that be taken into account this year, I see it to a degree, but you're right. The main competition, Creighton, moved on to the Big East. So, again, they haven't really faced anybody. But you can only beat the teams that are in front of you. We say this in college football every year. We should say the same in college basketball. Should they schedule a little bit better? Yeah, but guess what? Nobody wants to play this team.
There was an article, I forget in which I forget which website to credit. I think it was ESPN, where they offered to play two for ones, where they'd play two on the road versus one at home against these big teams, and all of them said no, which you can kind of understand, which is frustrating for everybody, but you can kind of understand the credibility. Nobody wants to admit, you know, nobody wants to lose to the quote-unquote mid-major. In Wichita State, which is a team that's had success in the past, Final Four back in the 60s, they have a bit of a history. Actually, Xavier McDaniel, I believe, led the NCAA in scoring and rebounding. I think he was the first guy, maybe the only guy to do that. And he did it, out of Wichita State.
Two guys have done that. Kurt Thomas did it as well.
Did he really? At TCU? Hard to imagine Kurt Thomas scoring that much.
He scored 29 a game, actually.
Yeah. So you have Wichita State. Now, is your Cuse, are they a one seed at this point?
Absolutely not. No way. Not a chance. Look, the one seeds, if the season ended right now, first of all, they're ranked seventh, so I think that automatically takes them out of the one seed consideration.
If they win the ACC tournament.
They have to make, I think that depends. If they lose in the ACC tournament, who wins it? Because if it's North Carolina, I don't think that matters. If it's Virginia or Duke, I definitely think that matters. Because the winner of Virginia, if it's Virginia or Duke, the winner of the ACC tournament will take the one seed. So right now my one seeds are Arizona is basically a lock in the West, as far as I'm concerned. Wichita State is basically a lock in the Midwest. Florida is basically a lock in the South. And all you have left is the East. So you got four teams that could potentially get that number one spot. Three are in the ACC, Syracuse, Duke, and Virginia. And one is in the Big East, and that's Villanova.
And
one's in the Midwest, and that's Kansas.
Right. That's what I was going to mention.
Yeah, considering if Kansas wins the Big 12 championship, it's a tournament, they're in. That's it. If they lose, then it opens it up to one of those four teams. Now, the interesting thing is if Kansas wins the ACC tournament, wins the Big 12 tournament, but doesn't face, who am I missing? Doesn't face
Iowa State.
Or Iowa State. So they don't face them. Yet Duke faces Syracuse, Virginia, and North Carolina, or two of the three, do they become the one seed? And I think then it's a strength of schedule argument, and right now Kansas blows away everybody in the strength of schedule.
Yeah, I believe Kansas has the number one strength of schedule in the country this year. So what teams are you looking at? And the reason I'm also bringing this up is I'm not going to be here for next week's show, I don't believe. So I want to talk a little bit more college basketball than usual.
Well, that makes two of us because I'll be on vacation.
Oh, so I guess either we have a sub or we don't have a show next week. Wow.
Well, we'll try and pull in Anthony Mavelli to do the show. We'll see if he can cover it for us.
Well, if anyone wants to call in over the next 45 minutes or so, 760-283-0846. So who would be your All-American team right now?
Oh, man. Nothing like putting me on the spot. Well, I think Doug McDermott's in. I don't think I think he would be unanimous as far as I'm concerned.
Actually, before you even move further, we have a call, and I believe this is Anthony.
Excellent. So we can ask him point blank if he'll host the show.
You're on with Seth and Sean.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Anthony, what's going on?
What's up? I just wanted to make a quick comment on, you guys are talking about Syracuse whether they're going to be a number one seed or not. I just want to make my argument that, they might not, just because they're not going to be a number one seed doesn't mean they don't deserve to be one. Talent-wise, you said Kansas is the most talented team. I have to agree in terms of NBA talent, but when it comes to, college basketball and being the most productive team in general, I think Syracuse has their top seven guys are better than any top seven in the country, just that their depth is so limited. I mean, you could take – they lose to Boston College. It is what it is. I think they were looking forward to the Duke game two days later, so they weren't really up for that game. And then you take a look at the Duke game, and, with that charge or that block could have gone either way. It's a bang-bang play. I don't blame the ref for it whatsoever. But, you're going to knock them for that, whatever. The game was in Duke. They beat Duke in Syracuse, so they split that series. I don't think that matters much. And then you go to Virginia. Virginia was all riled up. They could have won their first ACC outright, the conference outright, in however many years in Virginia. And Syracuse is up at halftime until Jeremy Grant gets hurt. And then, like I said, their biggest flaw is their depth. So if anyone gets hurt, they're done. But I think Syracuse, in terms of their top seven, I think they'd be the best. They're still the best team in the country when it comes to tournament time.
Well, before Sean, and I know Sean's going to have a point to argue with this, in addition to those games, we also looked at the three games they won. They were two prior to that, one in the middle. They beat Pittsburgh on a miracle shot by Tyler Ennis. They beat NC State on a miracle comeback. And they beat Maryland by two. And although I am a Maryland alum, Maryland very well could have won that game. They have not looked good. They looked pretty good, I thought, against Duke. The call was what the call was. I agree. Boston College, their athletic director had just died, and apparently they were playing their sports information director had just died, and they were playing kind of in memorial for him. But this is the same problem Syracuse has every year. Every year Syracuse doesn't have depth. Or Boeheim doesn't use it. I actually think this team is surprisingly almost deeper than some of the other teams we've seen over the last few years. And what happens is either they seem to be one extreme or the other. And Sean, you can articulate this. You've been following Cuse basketball much longer than I have, and caring a lot more than I do. But what are you thinking about this right now?
Well, I mean, wow, Syracuse isn't even on ESPN right now, which is kind of sad. I got to find their game. They are playing Georgia Tech right now, so I got to find it. But anyway, the concept is that I think Anthony's right in some regards. I think top seven, Syracuse probably has as much, if not more, talent than anybody else. I would say probably outside of Kansas, who we both think has the most talent in the NCAA, and then maybe Kentucky. But the problem is, or the issue is, that those seven players have such defined roles that if one of them is either not working or not doing what he's supposed to be doing, or he's hurt, then they have a massive cog in the wheel that is gone. And if you take out Trevor Cooney's 33 points, I think it was 33, against Notre Dame, Trevor Cooney's shooting 29% from the three-point line this year. That's not going to get it done. The last time that this team scored more than 60 points was against Pittsburgh, aside from the Duke game, which was in doesn't really count. But, I mean, the fact they just cannot score without Jeremy Grant. And that's a problem for this team. So don't think they're a one-and-done team because I can't see anybody solving the zone in the first round. I can't see a 15 team solving the zone in the first. But they're in a lot of trouble if Grant is not healthy. So I agree with you, Anthony. But they're a two or a three seed. I'm hoping for a two in the East, as I say all along. But they have a lot of problems if they can't get Grant healthy.
Right. No, I fully agree. I mean, it all depends on Jeremy Grant. I think he'll be all right. But you saw it, like you said it perfectly. I mean, if Cooney's off and Grant comes out for the second half and they got killed on the boards, especially on the defensive end. But, like you said, if everyone could stay, I think if everyone could stay healthy, they're as talented as everyone, as anyone in the tournament this year. But well, it's all dependent on that. But I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that. So I'll let you guys go. Thanks for that.
Well, wait a
second,
Anthony. We have a question for you. Would you like to host the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show next week at the same time?
At the same time?
Yes.
No,
both Seth and I are on vacation, which we did not realize, and we do need a guest host to step in. So perhaps we can, I don't know when your show is, but maybe Seth can swap for your show.
I'll definitely talk to you guys later on in the week. I know. I think I might have something to do around like 8 o'clock, but I might be able to fill in the beginning. Absolutely.
Okay.
We're definitely, I know we want to do a fantasy baseball preview show very soon, so maybe we could, maybe we can get a head start on that. So we'll talk about it later in the week.
Sounds good, Anthony. Thanks for the call.
All right, later, guys.
All right, just so you know, that was Anthony Mavelli, who also hosts a show on Blog Talk and Pack Sports page. Right now, Syracuse is up 9-8 with 13:47 left in the first half. And for those that are tuning in at home that would like to put it on mute while they listen to the show, it is on channel 196 on Time Warner.
Yeah, because that's really what I'm dying to do right now. Watch two teams couldn't give a part about. Moving on.
I'm sorry that Maryland isn't worth watching this year. I'm sorry about that.
I'm sorry. Believe me, I'm sorry about it as well. Hopefully Anthony Mulvihill will be able to take over for Tuesday and maybe start doing some fantasy baseball, which actually he should probably be hosting with you, Sean, since I don't think I can contribute too much. Going forward, interesting trade in the NHL today. Roberto Luongo, the man that Vancouver kept despite enormous criticism when they traded Corey Schneider to the Devils, gets traded back to Florida for, I don't even think it's been, last time I checked, they hadn't even released who he was traded for. What exactly is Vancouver thinking? What exactly is the idea? Oh, here it is. Roberto Luongo and Steve Anthony for Jacob Markstrom and Sean Matthias. Now, again, I am not the big hockey guy. Is this the beginning of the Vancouver rebuild?
Yes, absolutely. This is you're going to see a couple of trades being made from Vancouver probably in the next 24 hours. Ryan Kesler is supposedly going to be shipped out somewhere else, although I think he'll gain more towards the draft than he will right now. But I definitely think this is more of a rebuild. Roberto Luongo had an $8.5 million salary cap hit. Vancouver is retaining some of that money on the Luongo deal. Now, the thing about hockey trades, unlike baseball and basketball, is that you can actually keep some of the money on the cap. So you can say, I'm trading Roberto Luongo, who has an $8 million hit, for two players that have a $2 million hit, and I'm going to keep $4 million of that. So that way that it's on my salary cap and not yours. Very, very strange way, but it's interesting to trade the value of money more than anything else. Rather than giving it, you're not necessarily giving the money to the Panthers, but you're just keeping it on your cap. Just an intricate detail for or an interesting detail about the salary cap in the NHL, but it's definitely a stepping stone for both Florida and for Vancouver. Vancouver is breaking it down and trying to rebuild on the fly behind the Sedins, and the Panthers are saying, we are going to spend some money. Their owner came out last week and said, we're ready to spend some money. Guess what? Vernon Longo some money. And interestingly to note, the Islanders have scratched Thomas Vadek tonight, who is the number one guy to move in the NHL, one of the most sought-after commodities on the market. And they scratched him because they don't want him getting hurt before they can trade him tomorrow.
Well, talking quickly about the NHL trade deadline, the biggest trade was late last week, where finally the Ryan Miller saga in Buffalo was over. Traded with Captain Steve Ott to St. Louis for their goalie Yaroslav Halak, for a couple other, Chris Stewart, 2000 in the next year first round pick, and a little bit in addition as well. Is this the move that gets St. Louis to the Stanley Cup?
Yes. Well, I think it does two things. A, it gets them to the Stanley Cup. B, it gets Buffalo tremendous value, because the other thing that came out of that deal was if Ryan Miller re-signs before the draft, then the third-round pick that went to the Sabres becomes a first-round pick. So they actually get two firsts. So they get unbelievable value for Ryan Miller. I mean, beyond unbelievable value. So well done to Tim Murray for pulling that rabbit out of his hat, because right now I believe they're like the Boston Celtics of the NHL. They have more picks than they know what to do with. So well done. And, I think this definitely gets Ryan Miller and the Blues to the Stanley Cup. I mean, the weak point on that team is definitely Halak, and now he is a Buffalo Sabre. So we'll see what happens.
Anything else to note? I mean, the one trade that kind of surprised everybody was apparently Minnesota was making a serious run at Martin Brodeur, which would have been interesting. Brodeur's two kids are in high school in Minnesota. So I guess that was why it was made sense. However, they went for Ilya Bryzgalov from Edmonton. Major impact or not really?
Oh, definitely an impact. I mean, Minnesota's two goalies were Josh Harding, who suffers from MS and has been an unbelievable story playing hockey with MS, but he hasn't played since before the new year, and Nicholas Backstrom, who has been downright awful. So Ilya Bryzgalov, who I can never pronounce this guy's name, he's like Benege for Syracuse, so I always go blah, blah, blah. Basically is going to be starting a lot of those games for the Wild, in my opinion. So I believe that was a huge deal for them and definitely a difference maker. I don't think Marty Brodeur would have been a good fit in that system. And they do play the trap, so that would have been good. But I think that, quite frankly, Marty Brodeur's best years, he's 40 years old, 40 plus. His best years are way behind him. And I just don't think it would have been as big of a difference maker.
That makes sense. And that was I didn't think of it in regards to a difference maker. As you said, Marty Brodeur, probably the five best goalies, three best goalies of all time. But his prime was probably 8 to 10 years ago. And it would have been similar to seeing a guy in his last legs after 20, I compared it to, if Cal Ripken ended up playing with the San Diego Padres. I mean, it would have been just, in his last year, it would have been kind of disappointing when you have a guy who's been there for 20 years with one team and, reaches a certain status. And then, if he goes back to Montreal, which was the other rumor, he's from Montreal, I think it would have been nice. But it would have been kind of strange to see him in any other uniform besides the Devils.
Let me ask you this, Seth. You're a Devils fan. I mean, not a huge hockey fan, but a Devils fan. What would it have been emotionally for you to see Marty Brodeur in another uniform?
It would have been uncomfortable. It had been strange. As I said, I am not a diehard. There are people, I have a lot of friends who are true diehard Devil fans. And I think, but I think at this point, we know it's the end. I think he knows it's the end. And if he wanted to, go, I wouldn't like to see him go anywhere else. You know, I can see that if you're a Ray Bourque and you played in Boston for 15 years, you want to make the one run at the Cup, for instance, which he did in Colorado in 2001. But he's won three. You know, he's won three cups. He's been to, I think, two other finals. So it would have been strange and a little bit disappointing, but understandable. But I do think it would have been kind of neat to see him if he went back to Montreal. I thought that would have been a good story. But to me, it's not like he's in his prime. It's not like he's a year or two out of his prime. He's well beyond that, I think, at this point. So I would have been okay with it.
I mean, there's no doubt that he's definitely beyond his prime. I mean, it's the end of an era, and Corey Schneider is definitely the future for that team. The Islanders, just to wrap up, the Islanders did make a trade, and they traded Andy McDonald to the Flyers, Andrew McDonald, for a third pick this year, a second-round pick next year, and an AHL center from Long Island, which really doesn't matter at all. But the fact is that McDonald wanted a four-year, $20 million contract, and the Islanders were willing to do 4 years and 16, so $1 million off each year, and McDonald was not going to do that. So look for another trade from the Flyers in the next 24 hours, because they got a ton of defensemen now. So we'll see what happens. But the Flyers, again, one thing they still have not done with or not helped with is their goaltending. I mean, every year we say the same thing, that they have to get a top-flight goaltender, and every year we see them call up short. So I'm wondering whether this will just be another example of that.
Well, we're about halfway through the show, and it's one of the things that's been brought up over the last couple weeks, months, is the NFL is in serious discussion to penalize anyone who uses the N-word during a game. And this is referencing back to the Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito debacle from last year. And we posted late at the end of the day, whether you think it should be penalized, whether you think it should be banned. And we probably posted it too late to have a real discussion on it in regards to what other people thought. I know Brian from New Jersey posted that it absolutely should not be banned. I actually agree. It's not a word I use, and you can talk about the semantic of the A versus the ER, which to people of our generation have two very, very different connotations. But I don't think it's our place to legislate what's being said here, or not our place. I think it's a player's right to do that, not ours.
Okay. So let's – and I know what – I have a hard time with this conversation because I am all for free speech. And as a lawyer, I think that that's part of – I believe in the First Amendment. However, the First Amendment doesn't necessarily protect you in the workplace. In fact, it does not protect you in the workplace at all. It also does not protect hate speech. So I would love to know how you or anybody else or the NFL can basically determine whether it's hate speech on one hand and not hate speech on the other hand when using the exact same word. And when you use that word, and I don't use that word, and I don't think I've ever uttered that word, because to me it's tremendously offensive to the people of African-American descent. How do you legislate on the field who's saying it in a derogatory manner and who's saying it not in a derogatory manner? And you as a boss have every right to legislate what's said in the workplace. If you said that in a court of law, you wouldn't be entitled to your free speech.
So what exactly are you saying? Do you think it should be banned?
Here's the thing. I don't think it should be banned, but I don't have any right to say it should or shouldn't. It's Roger Goodell's league. He can do whatever he wants.
Well, but we question what we question. I think that's a cop-out. We question what commissioners think all the time. we question what commissioners do, what commissioners say.
Yes, we have our own personal opinion, but what you said earlier was he doesn't have the right to say it. He does.
Well, I'm
he
not
has the right to
right.
do whatever he wants. That's the difference.
Well, you're talking legalese here. I'm saying straight.
I'm absolutely talking legalese here.
I'm not talking legalese. I'm not a lawyer. I'm saying very simply, do you think that there should be a ban on the N-word in a professional sport, in professional football? I don't think it's
no.
I don't think it's a I don't think it's even a reasonable conversation.
No, it's a reasonable conversation because there are certain words in baseball you certainly can't say, else you're going to get thrown out by the umpire.
Sure.
I guarantee you if you went to an African-American ref and said the N-word to him and said, use whatever expletive you want with the N-word, you're going to get tossed out of the game.
I agree.
Right? So, I guess the case is, again, where do you draw the line?
Well, it's also two very, very different games. Baseball, basketball and football, you have physical confrontation. You have one-on-one. You're dealing a constant movement where the smack talking that happens in baseball, which is not even in the ballpark, I think, of what happens in football and basketball. Within the African-American community, and I'm certainly not speaking for them, but – the word is often used not in a negative connotation. We all know that. It's used as a friend and a brother or whatever in one way. In the other way, it's used the way that we all know it and don't use it. And I think it's impossible to make determinations when you're listening on the field to which one's being utilized. So to me, this is really an overcompensation. It's almost everything is done reactively. And this is in reaction to what happens with Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. It's not reasonable. It's an overreaction to a horrible event. That's my feeling.
I don't have a problem with reactionary law. In fact, I think most laws are reactionary to something. Most rules are reactionary. We wouldn't have instant replay. We wouldn't have an all-star game that counts if we never had a tie. We wouldn't have instant replay if the umpires never got a call wrong. I mean, they're reactionary things to everything, and there are certainly reactionary laws. So the fact that this is a reaction to Jonathan Martin, I'm not really sure it is. I think there's more of a reaction to Richard Sherman. More than anybody else.
That's probably true as well. I said that's probably true as well.
So it's not necessarily because of the Wells report that came out. It's a reaction to a lot of things. I mean, I was reading today about Mike McCreary, who is about to testify in the in the trial regarding Penn State and the cover-up. And there are now rules in the NCAA that are in regards to that. So that's a reaction, right? I mean, I don't have problems with reactionary law. Reactionary law is the way that the world works. You don't think of most of the time you don't think of a situation before it happens. Because if you think of a situation before it happens, and then you go in front of a court, and I'm using this in a legal context,
right,
then you're saying it's overbroad and it's not happening. So why the heck should we legislate against something that doesn't happen? It's not right. So there's that. But I understand what you're saying. I understand that it's hard to legislate on the field who is saying it in one context. And what the NFL is trying to do is saying, you know what? We're not going to legislate it. You just can't say it. I think they're going about this the right way. I think you either have an all or nothing and no tolerance policy. You and I are on difference of opinion as to what tolerance that should be. You think it should be, you can say it whenever, and my response is you shouldn't say that whenever.
Oh, look, in a perfect world, you don't say it, but this is not a perfect world, and these are our realities, and this is not something that's going to stop. And I would hate to see games and seasons impacted based on this when 95% of the populace within it doesn't care one way or the other.
Well, let me ask you this. When rules are made, and I don't care what rule it is, and trust me, you can see this more in college basketball than I think in anything else in the last probably 5 years. There are new rules in college basketball, right, regarding fouls and how they're scored and how they're reffed, okay? The touch foul as opposed to hard contact, okay? And this has been pretty much discussed since the beginning of the season. And at the beginning of the season, there were a lot more fouls. And towards now and towards later in the season, the players are adjusting. And there aren't fouls. Those same fouls are not being called because they're not being made. So, yeah, at the beginning of any rule, the head-hunting rule, the defenseless receiver rule, you saw more penalties than you do now because it's a new rule and people have to get used to what the rule is. I don't have a problem with that. With every rule comes some adaptation. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe one game may be decided with that. I agree. But trust me, after that one game is decided, and we'll talk about Golden Tate, one game is decided, people will learn. The NFL learned after one game that was decided by a horrible pass interference call that the refs needed to be back. And they were. Right? I mean, it's called adaptation. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
If I have a rule, there won't be penalties.
No, I guess I'm a rebel. Because I just see this. Without a clue. But I just see this as an overcompensation for events. And, you know, it's not a justification that the word is good or bad. Well, it's obviously bad, but it's...
Wait. You just said the word is bad. Right?
Yeah.
You just said the word is bad.
Yes.
And yet you're saying, okay, the NFL should allow it to be used anyway. So
yeah,
how is that not a justification that it's okay?
I don't see it as a justification. I don't. I just see it as it's part of a vernacular. It's not a justification. That's right. I don't use the word because I don't think it's right.
The vernacular in the 1800s was that used often and repeatedly.
Do you think it's the NFL's job to change this? I don't.
It's their workplace. They can change whatever they want. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's not their job, but in some ways I think it's their responsibility.
Oh, I disagree. I think this is the kind of thing where if you had a majority of the players agree, and I realize that Roger Goodell runs this, but this is the kind of thing where, in my mind, you have to have this is brought up in every conversation, we read about this all the time, and I've been in locker rooms, and you've been in locker rooms, and we've seen this before. The word is used, forgetting on it, on a minutely basis, on a every hour, every minute, it's used in locker rooms.
You're right.
And I find it very difficult, for people who are not playing, to say, well, you can use this or you can't use this. If the players on the field make this determination, if they say as a consensus or the majority, we don't want this being used, we don't, you know what, this word shouldn't be used, that's one thing. I find it very difficult for, Roger Goodell and, the owners who don't play the game can never be called that word because there isn't a black owner, as far as I can think of, in the NFL. It's almost like an I just see it as a complete overcompensation.
Well, let me compare it to something else, which happened in sports that the majority of the players did not want, and there was a reason for it, okay? About, I think it was 5-6 years ago. By the way, Syracuse down 28-23 with 2 minutes left to go in the first half. About 10 years ago, David Stern was encountering a problem. Okay, it was after the Malice in the Palace. It was after, well, it was during Allen Iverson's, I guess, reign at the top. And his problem was that his league was perceived in a way. And the way that he did, the way that he said, we're going to change the way that my league is perceived, is we're going to make all the players wear suits and ties on the court when they're on the bench, on planes, and when they're in public in NBA functions, for lack of a better term. And we had this dispute. There was a lot of talk about that, right? I mean, it was called the dress code. A lot of talk about it. Okay? Do you think the NBA is perceived that way still?
No.
I don't. Okay,
but
so David Sloan got what he wanted by doing that, right?
Now, however, I don't remember the exacts on the dress code, but my recollection is, number one, it's not in place at this point.
Oh, yes, it is. It absolutely is in
place. You don't see – not everyone wears a suit coming to the game.
No, they wear jackets. Everybody has to wear a jacket.
No, not
absolutely
everybody.
Absolutely is in place.
Yeah. I just see it as a different generation of player. I see it as a – you know, you look at your major talent, your Wades, your LeBrons, your Durants, and the big endorsement money. You know, Iverson got endorsement money, and Iverson is obviously the spokesman of the street player and the street credibility. But Kobe made a lot more money. And, you know, these players are looking at it from the endorsement dollar and are not going to take the chance of trying to rebel against that. Now, maybe it's also because by the time they came into the league, this was already enforced. So they didn't really think that it wasn't enough argument against it for the contrary. No, it's an interesting argument.
Yeah, I think that this is more actually a reaction to Richard Sherman than it is actually the Wells. Because I think this is Roger Goodell's way of saying, I want to do what David Stern did, and I want to clean up the image that the NFL has, rather than I want to curb free speech. In fact, I don't think it has anything to do with that.
This can
and
be
I
talked
think,
about.
I think he actually said, we're gonna outlaw all racial epitaphs, not just that one. So, not that there are many others to be used, but
I was gonna say there's not too much else that I can really think of.
I'm with you.
Other than, so we've got about 15 minutes left, and I guess we'll talk a little bit of NBA, and man. We've talked about the Knicks a little bit. We've tried to avoid it because it's just so sad. The rumors are now that apparently maybe Carmelo wants to go to the Heat if Bosch goes to Dallas. Although that would be pretty interesting because you'd pretty much be building around three wingmen. You know, maybe he goes to Houston and Daryl Morey has the three superstars to win the championship. I know you originally thought, and you've continued to state that you think Carmelo will stay. This team is so bad at this point. You really see him staying in New York?
I see him staying in New York, and I know you're going to argue with me, but I think it's over the money and it's over his career. He's going to be the new Bernard King, and he's going to stay in New York. The new Bernard King. He's going to stay in New York. He's going to be the best player in New York. He's going to have all the dollars that go along with that. There's no way he can go to Miami. Well, there is a way under the cap, but it's very, very complicated. First of all, Dwayne Wade's going to opt in because nobody's going to pay him $46 million over the next 2 years. Nobody.
Agreed.
So that's $22 million on the cap right there. Let's assume that Bosch leaves. Okay, that's only $16 million. That he's gone. And I think they're over the cap to begin with. So let's say they renounce Bosch. I think they're only about $10 million under the cap. So the only way that happens is either in a sign trade where, could you imagine the Knicks making a trade with the Heat to give up Carmelo Anthony? Not a chance.
I, not a chance. And besides, Miami doesn't have a single piece of single doesn't have a single individual that the Knicks would be interested in.
Right, and they don't have draft picks at all.
Right.
So that's
right.
not happening. So the only way that that happens is if Carmelo takes a $15 million pay cut. Do you see that happening?
Not particularly. Well, if LeBron opts out, not that he's going to resign for a lesser amount, but if he maintains...
I think he's going to resign for the... His max that he can resign for is 22. Even if he takes the lesser amount, which is what he's being paid now, which is 16, that's what I went with that on. I went based on him taking 16, not taking 22. He takes 22, they're basically capped out anyway.
So, if Carmelo stays in New York, are we allowed to hear him complain? Does he have the right to complain about the team surrounding him anymore? Because if he's resigned, he's going to resign at what is it, $29 million? Some ridiculous $129 million over 5 years, where he's going to
somewhere on their cap.
They have no draft picks. They have no real young talent. I mean, Shumpert. People seem to like Shumpert a lot more than I do. Hardaway is a nice player, but you're not looking at a future superstar here. Maybe because we live in New York and we're just so accustomed to it that it's going to continue. But if Carmelo stays, does he deserve – not does he deserve. It's hard for me to justify hearing any complaints from him about the team surrounding him when you know he can eat up a third of the cap.
Well, Syracuse is down 8 at halftime, by the way. They scored 21 points. 23 points in the whole first half to Georgia Tech. So that just says a lot about their offense. Jeremy Grant hasn't played 1 minute. So let's hope Jimmy V's got something in the second half. Okay. Does he have the right to complain? Not next year, but the year after he does. Next year, he has to know what he's getting into. Next year, the Knicks have no draft picks this year. They have no cap room. They basically are stuck with what they have this year, next year. Period. Now, in 2015, at the end of 2014, so 2014-2015, the only person I believe that is on the cap, there may be one other, but it's not for a lot of money, is Carmelo Anthony. So at that point, I think he has a right to have the – he's basically in the same view as Kobe Bryant, right? I re-signed for a ton of money. I didn't give my team any wherewithal to go get anybody else because I signed for a lot of money. And he's like Kobe this year going into next year. So he is the only superstar on the team, and he must – He should have a little bit of input into the decisions, but at the same point, he does what the GM says. He has a right to complain if in 2015, 2016, the team is not any better. I think he has a right then.
Now, we're about halfway through, well, not halfway, we're about two-thirds of the way through the season. It's obviously a two-team race in the East, and about six teams, pretty much it's a six-team run for 3 through 8 going forward in the East. The West is pretty incredible. You look at these teams, I mean, you look at Oklahoma City, who has survived without Westbrook brilliantly. You look at San Antonio, you look at Portland. Has been a shock. San Antonio, I figured there would be a step back. Of course, there hasn't been because it's San Antonio, and there's just never a step back. Phoenix has been great. Dallas has been surprising. Memphis is coming on. It almost seems a shame that all these Western Conference teams are going to be eliminated in the first round, or that you're only going to have four left, because you're looking at possibly 10 of the top 12 teams in the league this year are in the West. And... You know, it should be a fun final third of the season going down the wire. What's a first round playoff that you first round series that you really hope to see?
Well, hold on a second. Abundantly clear that you are correct in that the majority of the good teams are in the West. I just don't see any of them better than Indiana or Miami. So they remind me very much of the way that the old Heat and the old Knicks used to beat the crap out of each other in the playoffs. And then, oh, the Bulls have the decimated team that comes through. And I think that's very similar to what you're going to get here, is that the West are going to beat the crap out of each other, and then the Heat or the Pacers, and I have yet to make my selection on that, the Heat or the Pacers are going to be really fresh because they're only going to have one tough series, and that's the one against each other.
Now, you don't think Chicago gives either team difficulty, or the Nets, if they can somehow put everything together, and they are playing better, can give either team. No, I don't think – I think everyone believes, and I do too, that Indiana and Miami are going to cruise cruise into the Eastern Conference Finals. You don't think playing a Chicago will wear you down, playing a Brooklyn with Pierce and Garnett, who have been there before, can at least bring them to a 5-6-7 game series? Not five game, but a six or seven game series.
Five games, certainly. Six games, maybe. Can't ever see either one of those teams forcing game seven. And honestly, I can't see them forcing game six, really. Maybe the Nets, if everything clicks, and I mean everything clicks, but who's scoring for Chicago? Because until somebody shows me a guy that can score for Chicago 20 points a game, then you have a problem. Because if they face the Pacers, they're going down at 4 or maybe 5. Because you'll have Noah facing off against Hibbert, and I'd still take Hibbert every day of the week. So who's going to guard Paul George? I don't see how that works. If you got them facing Miami, yeah. And who's guarding LeBron again? I don't
see
how that's working either.
So right now, I'm not sure of many things. I am very sure it will not be Mike Dunleavy.
I mean, in all respects, it'll be Jimmy Butler.
Right.
But
that would be my guess.
Jimmy Butler still cannot score 20 points a game. So I mean, I don't see how either one of them faces a test until they see the end result. Now, to answer your question, which teams do I hope will match up together? I so want to see San Antonio face off against Golden State. That, to me, seems like just a whole lot of fun. And if not those two, then the two that I want to see, which won't happen because it can't – well, it can if they're the 4 or 5, but I don't see it happening, would be Phoenix against Golden State because there would be no defense play.
Yeah, that would be like the old Denver Nuggets in the 80s. Denver and Dallas have scores of 135 to 130.
Right.
And who is your – right now I believe it's a two-person race for MVP. But I'm kind of curious to see who else you would have in that top 4 or 5.
Top 4 or 5. LaMarcus Aldridge has to be there. I think he's definitely in there. I think Kevin Love is in there. Now, granted, this is like tier 2. Because tier 1 is 2 guys, and that's LeBron and Durant, and that's it. And there's so much of a difference between tier 1 and tier 2 that it's not even a conversation. So I think Aldridge and Love are probably in tier 2. Anybody else in tier 2? Maybe Paul George in tier 2?
He's falling back a bit, I think.
Well, but falling back from what? Tier 1? He was probably in Tier 1 the first quarter.
I think he was on the precipice. I think he's fall. I don't think he – I think he's more – I don't think he's going to be thought of in the top 5 at this point for MVP. I agree with you on Love. I agree with you on Aldridge. You know, a name which actually sounds funny, but how good has Joakim Noah been this year in Chicago? I mean, that team has nothing without him. And they are, you know, say what you want about them, but they are fourth in the East. And there are a couple others. You can look at Blake Griffin has been surprisingly, extremely good in Clipperland. Dirk Nowitzki's been sensational in Dallas. The man just never gets old. It's going to be an interesting last third of the year, and I'm looking forward to it. So we got about 5 minutes to go, so I figured, would you like to start?
Sure, I'll go. Major League Baseball doesn't test against marijuana. Once you're on the 40-man roster, you're not tested for marijuana. But when you're in the minor leagues, you are tested for marijuana. And an Astros prospect who is one of their top prospects and used to be a Phillies prospect was traded for Hunter Pence when Pence went to the Phillies. His name is Jonathan Singleton. And he came out a couple of days ago and said, I am addicted to marijuana, which, truth be told, I didn't think was an addicting drug. So it was interesting to read. And then he said, when I couldn't deal with marijuana, now he is suspended for 50 games, so under the minor league drug policy. So when he said, when I couldn't have marijuana, I drank, and I became an alcoholic. And he said this publicly. This guy is 21, 22 years old, and the maturity level that you show by admitting that you have a problem at that point in your life, especially when you know that right after you finish with this suspension, you're going to be on the major league roster, and they can't test for either one of those, is incredible. Props to Jonathan Singleton. I look forward to seeing you in an Astros uniform, because I love the Astros uniforms just in general. And if you produce, who knows? I could use an Astros uniform.
Well,
maybe I'll get
you
one.
You may be able to play for the Astros, because I'm not sure anyone else knows anyone who is.
Come on. The Astros, quite frankly, have probably the second best minor league system in Major League Baseball. So wait 2 years.
I will be waiting 2 years. And in that 2 year span, they will be probably the worst team in baseball. From the sublime to the downright silly. Bobby Petrino has caught a lot of grief over the years, deservedly so. And to my surprise, and to be honest, a little bit to my disgust, Tom Jurich, the really top tier athletic director at Louisville, brought him back. And one of his big recruits was arrested this week, Sharif Raheed Muhammad. Is facing a felony charge for having sex with his 14-year-old cousin. And I don't even really know what to say to that, except that apparently he started this when he was 11, when she was 11. Now, as I said, I'm kind of just speechless reading about this, and it's good to see that Bobby Petrino, now certainly you don't blame him, but somehow, when it comes to Bobby's recruits, none of these things really surprise me. Also, I'm not a big ESPN Sports Nation person at all, I think it's a terrible show. But Michelle Beadle came back to ESPN, and if you can find like her 5-minute intro reintroduction after her disaster in NBC, it's pretty funny to watch. So I highly advise anyone to watch it. Both Sean and I will not be on next week. So you'll have 1 week to what are you going to do without us? What are our fans going to do without us, Sean?
That's what I'm saying.
There you go. So we'll be back on probably March 18th to do some NCAA tournament preview. Should be a blast, as always. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens. Seth and Sean Sports Radio, Back Sports Page, Blog, Talk, Radio. Have a good night, everybody. Good night.
Yeah.